This is Kelly Blewett. What sets remarkable bosses apart from their peers? Professor Sidney Finkelstein says it's their ability to spread influence by grooming extraordinary talent. Restaurateur Alice Waters, designer Ralph Lauren, Oracle founder Larry Ellison, SNL creator Lorne Michaels, NFL coach Bill Walsh. These leaders and more are famous for spawning proteges who go on to transform entire industries. Their talent makes them not merely success stories, not merely organizational builders, but what Sidney Finkelstein calls super bosses. Sidney joins me today. He is the Stephen Roth Professor of Management at the Tuck School of Business at Dartmouth College and the author of the best-selling book, Why Smart Executives Fail. In full disclosure, Sidney is also my former boss. Welcome, Sidney.
Nice to talk to you, Kelly.
I'd like to open by asking you to tell us a little bit more about the concept of super bosses. What criteria does one have to meet to be a super boss?
So a super boss is, and this is my favorite definition of it, a super boss is a leader, is a boss that helps other people accomplish more than they ever thought possible. And as a result, they accelerate their careers. The evidence for that comes from looking at the career of a super boss and the proteges and former employees and what they've done in their own careers. And really what they are mega talent spawners. They help produce some of the best talent in every one of these industries. That's really what the concept's about.
So how did you start to identify these super bosses as a phenomenon out there in the world and go about studying them?
I started in a kind of a casual way because I didn't know I was going to write a book on this topic. I was just interested in it, and I'm really into the foodie scene and high-end restaurants. And I heard about this woman who lived in Berkeley, California, that created this restaurant called Chef Panisse, of course, Alice Waters. And so many of the people that worked for her, that spent some time in her kitchen or in her restaurant, ended up becoming extremely successful. And I saw that and I said, wow, that's kind of an interesting pattern. And I decided, well, let me look somewhere else. And I looked in the NFL, American football, and Bill Walsh, as you mentioned, a tremendous spawner of talent. I looked at the head coaches of the two Super Bowl teams, and I did a genealogical study of them, which is to say who they work for in their careers, and created these trees of talent. And when you do that, you discover Bill Walsh really spawned a tremendous number of head coaches that went on to be in the Super Bowl. In other words, the most successful head coaches. So I saw it in high-end restaurants. I saw it in the NFL. And then I started looking much more systematically in different industries, from hedge funds to advertising to newspapers to comedy. And everywhere I looked, I found a similar pattern. And that got me going to seeing, into trying to understand what did they do that was so special to account for that pattern.
Yeah, and you write in the introduction that in some ways Bill Walsh, I mean, not only do sports fans keep a lot of data, but there's also something really nicely comparable about same people, same kinds of situations, same kinds of competitions. But in other industries, you say, you have to be a lot more flexible in sort of figuring out how this talent tree really works. And I'm thinking about the idea that a super boss touches a lot of people. And that there's something about just having been in the presence of that person that will enhance a protege's career. And I wondered if you could give an example of something sort of less quantifiable, but that you wanted to kind of put your finger on as an example of the super boss's influence.
Well, the super boss influence is so remarkable. And I saw it in lots of different places. So you could take, say, Bill Sanders in the real estate business. Maybe someone not quite as well known as some others, but nonetheless a big super boss person that created LaSalle Realty and Security Capital and a couple of others. And by the way, so many people that are major leaders in the real estate business today actually work for Bill Sanders. And what he did really was, number one, push people hard, but at the same time inspire them with a vision that made them so energized. I remember talking to, I had to have been two or three different proteges of Bill Sanders when I was interviewing them and telling me stories about what he was like and when they first met him. And they each said something, different words, but the message was, you know, it was almost like there was a train that was leaving the station. And the train was Bill Sanders and his vision and what he was trying to accomplish. And they felt like they had to get on that train. This was their once-in-a-lifetime opportunity almost. They had to get on there. They had to be part of that. They wanted to participate in that. And it wasn't just Bill Sanders' story. So many of the proteges of superbosses said the same thing. So they were energized to change the world in some way. And those are things that are obviously powerful. But how many leaders, how many bosses in everyday life actually convey or inspire the same type of thing for their own people? I think anyone can do it, by the way, but I don't think enough leaders do that. And I think that's one of the big lessons of superbosses.
But you also argue that there can be some particular applications for people who want to be like a superboss. And I wondered if you could talk a little bit more about that.
Well, no doubt about that. In fact, one of the premises of the whole book is that anyone can become a superboss. And I call it Superboss Playbook. We figured out, you know, what do they have in common, these superbosses, despite their personalities that could be, you know, quite different. So how do you become a superboss? Well, why can't you craft a vision? Even if, you know, vision's not just for CEOs, people that are founding companies, anyone that has people working for them, you want to be able to convey a message to them that energizes them, that excites them, that gives them a reason to be part of what you're trying to create. But one other thing that I think anyone can do probably pretty quickly is customizing how they work with their team members. This is part of what I call an apprenticeship approach to developing talent. The way that all talent was developed for literally centuries, and the superbosses have resurrected the apprenticeship approach, and customizing is a big part of it. It means understanding who's on your team, what makes them tick, what type of development opportunities do they need, what do they need to be motivated. And I heard a lot of examples of that. And the best of the superbosses will not treat everyone exactly the same, which, by the way, has a huge implication when it comes to thinking about leadership, because so many people fall into this trap of saying or believing, you know, I have a leadership style. That's who I am. Well, you might have a leadership style, but that doesn't mean that you should be forcing that style into how you interact with 10 or 20 different people. Wouldn't you be better off trying to customize it so that you can accomplish more, so that people who work for you can do more, and as a result, create those opportunities? To me, it's not a shocking idea, except how few leaders and managers and bosses actually do it.
And this idea of customization that sort of works against the concept that we want to treat everybody the same or we want equality or fairness, that's one of the paradoxes, it seems like, that the superbosses hold. You write elsewhere that they're simultaneously micromanagers and extreme delegators. And there are these two sort of like opposing things that they manage to do at the same time. And I wondered if you could kind of speak a little bit about some of the paradoxes or counterintuitive things.
Right, sure. But one quick thing on the word fairness. One could argue that customizing to each individual is the most fair thing you're going to actually be doing. You're applying what works best for each person. But yes, there are a lot of counterintuitive things that I found. And you mentioned really a big one, which is this idea of giving big opportunities to people, delegating extensively, but at the same time getting close to. I don't think they, for the most part, went over that line, but they got close to that micromanagement line, which in this context means rolling up your sleeves and working closely with people on your team periodically. And as soon as you realize that you could do both at the same time, that actually you're going to benefit by giving people big opportunities, by doing that delegation, but at the same time, by working closely with them, you have an opportunity to teach them. And certainly superbosses are big-time teachers. There are other examples as well. And, you know, how do they manage teams? And they instill a sense of collaboration and a sense of competition at the same time. You know, Lorne Michaels is one of my favorite examples in this respect from Saturday Night Live. Of course, getting on SNL as a performer, it's a very collaborative show. It's based on skits, and that means working with somebody else. But the way the show works is over the course of the week, they develop two and a half hours of content, of skits. But the show is only an hour and a half. Mm-hmm. So that's almost the definition of competition, where you have to have a little bit of sharp elbows to do what you can to get your skit on. So you're competing and collaborating with the same people. And I think that is a really powerful skill and a counterintuitive idea as well.
What's been your favorite thing to share about this book, and what's the big thing you hope readers take away?
Number one, anyone can become a superboss. It's not just, you know, the Ralph Laurens of the world and famous people. They're people we studied for a lot of reasons, but that doesn't mean they're not superbosses up and down an organization, number one. And number two, an organization itself, a team, a company, can actually instill the superboss culture. It takes more work. It's something actually, Kelly, I'm working on right now a lot, both in my own research and my own consulting work to help organizations get there. But if you think about it, surrounding yourself with great people, helping other people get better, that's a formula for success for everyone who's involved with it. Why wouldn't we try to do it more? And so I'm hoping that that's a message that's going to resonate. That's going to be very personal. Everyone's had a lot of bosses. There are some bosses over their careers, and they'll remember the ones that gave them those opportunities. Why wouldn't we want to do that for other people?
Thank you, Sydney. It's been really fun to have you on.
Great to talk to you, Kelly.
We've been talking with author and professor Sydney Finkelstein about his new book, Superbosses. For more information, see our website at wvxu.org/aroundcincinnati. This is Kelly Blewett.